Okay. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Psychology Forum of the Commonwealth Club. My name is Dr. Patrick O'Reilly. I'm delighted beyond measure to have as our speaker tonight Dr. Maureen O'Sullivan, great name, by the way. And her research on lies and liars has fascinated me for years. I mean, if you type up Dr. Maureen O'Sullivan liars on Google, you just get a myriad of hits. It's a fascinating subject. She knows more about it than anybody I'm ever likely to meet. So please welcome Dr. Maureen O'Sullivan.
I've been having a little audiovisual difficulty, so I'm going to do things a little out of order. I'm going to be talking with you today about truth wizards, which is my field of research, and about micro-expressions, which are rapidly occurring facial expressions of emotion. I'm going to tie this into a discussion of the show Lie to Me. So how many of you have watched this? Could we have a little show of it? So a number of you, but some of you don't know anything about Lie to Me. Oh, my heavens. Okay, then you're going to learn about Lie to Me as a show. But in any event, micro-expressions are very fleeting facial expressions of emotion that can go on and off the face in a 15th of a second. Most people cannot tell that someone else is showing it. There are a small percentage of people who do it naturally without training. Everybody, about 85% of people with training, can learn to identify these micro-expressions. The show Lie to Me features micro-expressions as a clue to deception. Unfortunately, what micro-expressions are is a clue to emotion. When it occurs, you know what the person is feeling, and I'm going to give you the theory behind that, the belief that there are basic emotions that all human beings share, and that the facial expression, your brain, your autonomic nervous system, all of those are the same for people throughout the world. So if you show a prototypic fear expression, everybody in the world shows it the same way if they are not modulating it. Okay, so I was going to show you this little example of a naturally occurring micro-expression later in the talk, but because of difficulties, I'm going to show it to you now. What it is, it's a snippet of Marcia Clark interviewing Cato Kaelin. Cato Kaelin was O.J. Simpson's house guest, you know, this kind of goofy sort of guy, right? And in California, you're not supposed to profit from your testimony. So he was being asked by Marcia Clark if he had a book contract. And we know he was lying because there was evidence of the book contract, okay? So you're going to see his behavior, which I think is many, many clues to deception. However, in the beginning, he shows a micro-expression in real time, and then I'm going to play it back for you in slow motion so you can see what he is really feeling. And so let us look at that and see if you can see the micro-expression early in the tape.
Mr. Kaelin, you got a lot of money for your appearance on Current Affair, didn't you?
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, isn't it true, Mr. Kaelin, that you have a book proposal out for about $500,000 right now, don't you?
No.
You don't have a book proposal?
No.
Don't you aren't you represented by the William Morris Agency to write a book?
No.
Haven't you written a book proposal that has been submitted to St. Martin's for publication?
No.
You're not aware of any contract for $500,000 that you've been in, that you have signed?
I know it's out there, but I haven't done that.
You haven't signed it yet?
Oh, no, I heard a story about that. Mm-hmm. That's not true.
You don't have any book proposals out?
No. Don't want to do a book.
Plan to write a book in the future, Mr. Kaelin?
As of today, no way.
But you may well do that in the future, might you?
In the future, maybe.
Anybody see a rapidly occurring facial expression early on? Nobody saw anything? Yes. What'd you see? A flared or scrunched up nostril. Very good. But you see one person out of 80, okay? And that's about how many people could actually see it. I'm going to show it to the rest of you. But as you looked at him, what other clues did you have, besides my having told you that he was lying? What other clues might you have used to deduce that? His eyebrows were raised up in a kind of perplexed way at a point where he shouldn't be perplexed. What else? Right. Right. He kind of tried to relax his face, keep the expression off his face, and as Marcia consistently persisted in asking him the question, he sort of shrunk back, and then he finally gave it up and said, okay, maybe someday in the future. But in our focus here, it's on microexpressions. So let me show you his microexpression, and you'll see it in three different time sequences, fast and then slower and slower. Okay, there's the nostril flare, okay? Okay, there it is, slower. And now it'll come on, it'll stay on so you can really see it. Okay, okay. When your face looks like this, what does it look like you're about to do? Throw up, retch, vomit, okay? This is a prototypical universal sign of disgust, okay? So people are not liking something, either because they're morally repulsed, or they've seen something, feces, urine, or something that's physically repulsive to them, okay? So we know that at that point, he was feeling that, okay? Why? That's what we don't know. Is he disgusted with his lawyer for not prepping him? Is he disgusted with Marcia Clark for persisting to ask him about this? Is he pissed at himself, disgusted with himself, that he didn't put off signing the book contract? We don't know why he's disgusted, but we know he is. And so on this TV show, they'll show all these micro expressions, bursts of emotions, okay? And they are 100% the emotion that it is. But why the emotion is occurring is an interpretive task, and it takes experience with particular kinds of lies and with those kinds of people who are either lying or telling you the truth for you to come up with the correct answer. So the Lie to Me TV show oversells microexpressions, even though they are an extraordinarily helpful tool. If you can train yourself to recognize them, you can use them in your everyday life and in negotiations and whatnot. For example, a year ago, I was trying to negotiate with my dean about something, and she was resisting, and I couldn't understand why, because it was so simple in my mind. And I said to her, well, why don't you talk to the provost, who's a very good friend of hers? And this facial expression of fear went across her face, okay? Now, I don't know to this day why at that moment she showed fear. But I knew that was not the time for me to persist on that particular project. So I let it go. Okay. All right, so let's get out of here and into my little presentation to you. Okay. This is the TV show, which was a big success last year. It's been renewed for next year. And what it is, it's based on the career of my colleague Paul Ekman, who's played by Tim Roth. Okay, he's the scientist who's an expert lie detector. His sidekick is Jillian Foster, who is played by Kelly Williams. That's me. She's warm and compassionate, you know, and holistic. You know, so who's going to complain about that, okay? And then there's another character whose name in the series is Rhea Torres, and she is what's called a natural lie detector. And the producer of the show comes on and says, this is based on a real character, and this is a TSA, Transportation Security Administration person, who got, I gave 50 items, and they got 90% correct. I'm telling you, I will give you $1,000 if you give me that person. I tested over 100 TSA people, and none of them met the criterion for truth wizards that I'm going to talk with you about. So that is a total lie. This notion about natural lie detectors, people like this, and it's a very good dramatic strategy for the show. Because you have the Tim Roth character, who's the scientist, who spent his life learning this, you know, difficulty by difficulty. And then along comes Rhea Torres, and, you know, she just can do it, pew, under the cabbage patch, you know. It's just easy. And people want it to be easy, but it's not easy, okay? If you think about Tiger Woods, right, how much more gifted an athlete could there be? He's been playing golf since he was 2 years old, okay? And a few years ago, at the height of his career, he changed coaches, he changed his swing, he's changing his game again to accommodate his knee problems. So people who are natural at the highest level of expertise, it's not natural. It takes a tremendous amount of work, okay? So that just drives me nuts that they, you know, say this, because I don't think that's true. So the natural lie detector versus expert lie detectors is one of the problems, and microexpressions as cues to deception, but we'll talk more about that in a minute. Okay, most people cannot detect deception. And at the end of the talk, I'm going to give you some items in which people are lying or telling the truth, and we'll discuss them, and we'll see whether you can get them wrong. I'll show you what the clues are, and you can see how difficult it is, okay? And we know that most people can't detect deception because people have been studying it for years. And in over 100 studies, it's now almost close to 200, average accuracy is about 54%. And chance, if you pick your answers by flipping a coin, you'd get 50%. Okay? However, there are a few groups who are good at lie detection. And they're kind of sensible, all right? Secret Service agents. CIA agents as a group are no good. FBI agents as a group are no good. But Secret Service agents as a group were very good. Because what do? They guard public figures. So they scan crowds looking for somebody who doesn't fit the crowd. So they're very sensitive to nonverbal behavior. They also run the largest outpatient psychiatric clinic in the United States, okay, because they have to evaluate people who make threats against public figures. So they're saying they're going to assassinate somebody. Most of these people are mentally ill. And so they have to have an open mind and really evaluate, is this person really a threat or are they really mentally ill? So where they're coming from, it's unlike where police officers are coming from. Now, 9 of my 11 male cousins are police officers. So I love, with a name like O'Sullivan, are you surprised, right? So I love police officers. However, if they arrest somebody, they're not doing it to be mean. They're arresting somebody because they think the person is guilty, and they then are going to seek to get information or evidence to support that pre-existing belief. The Secret Service have a different attitude. Other kinds of law enforcement agents would be people who train other police officers in interviewing. So they have a very open-minded, searching for the truth kind of approach. And among that group, you'll find a large selection, a large number of expert lie detections. Psychologists, not so good, okay, as a group, not so good. But forensic psychologists, forensic psychiatrists, they have a high accuracy rate. Judges as a group, not so good, but federal judges, much better. Maybe it's just IQ, maybe it is because they have to be politically savvy in order to get appointed, but federal judges, about 20% of them are expert lie detectors, of those I've tested. I haven't tested all people. Dispute mediators who handle custody battles and labor arbitrators. And not only are there these groups who are highly accurate, there are what I call truth wizards. Now, people think, oh, it's like Harry Potter. Where did you pick up that stupid name, right? Okay. Where I got it from is in my mind, expert lie detectors are social emotional geniuses. But when you call somebody a genius, people often think of them as either artists or academic, brilliant people, you know. So I was looking for something else to indicate this special talent they had. And in some of the older definitions of wizards, they're a wise man or a sage. Somebody skilled in magic is what we all know. Or the meaning I want to use is a very clever or skillful person. Somebody with a particular kind of ability. And that is what they have. So the Truth Wizard Project started about 10 years ago. What I did is I do workshops like these with professional groups like lawyers and judges and so forth. And so in the course of those workshops, I would give a test, a lie detection test, and you're going to get some of those items later. If a group like this, if there were two people in the group who got 90% on the test, I would say, okay, would you give me your name? Can I send you some additional tests? And on those two additional tests, if they got 80% or better on at least one of the other two tests, then they got in the project. I also needed a control group, people who were like them, but who were not expert lie detectors. So I had their family members, like maybe their spouse or a colleague or someone else, take the test. And if they were just average, but they knew the lie detector, then they were the control for the truth wizard. So what I did is, after identifying these people over the course of the last 20 years, because we had identified a few before that, but more intensively over the last 10 years, I've interviewed 50 of these individuals. I have them rewatch the videos that they did so well on, and have them think aloud about what it is they are doing. Now, most of them will say, well, I don't know. It's just natural, you know, that word that I hate so much, you know. Or they'll say it's a gut instinct, or it's women's intuition, okay. But I watch them watching, okay. And so they'll go, and I'll stop the tape, and I'll say, now at that point, you jerked back. What were you thinking? And they'll say, oh, well, he said this, and before he said that. Or they'll start to smile. Or they'll start to go like this, or they'll interact with the video. And so I would interview them about what it is they were seeing or thinking or feeling. I also do life history interviews with them, and then the interviews are transcribed, and we are in the process of analyzing them now. Now, people are very interested in how common are such truth wizards. I've tested over 2,000 college students, zippo, for truth wizards. I believe you need a certain amount of life experience for this kind of expertise. Most of the studies on expertise in the arts, for example, poetry, things like that, show concentrated practice in the first 10 years of people's career. The pattern I'm finding with the truth wizards is many of them would be very good. They would be known as their station at their police station as the go-to person for a problem interview. But they'll get dissatisfied, just like Tiger Woods did, know he could be better. And they will go back to college or go back to get a PhD in clinical psychology. Or they'll apprentice themselves to a forensic psychiatrist. Or they'll take workshops in order to improve what they already know. And so it's later in life that you see this. Average age is 40s, 50s for the expert lie detectors. The youngest I ever found was 26. The next youngest was 42, okay? So this is a skill of maturity and of life experience. One of the things about the truth wizards, one guy really blew my mind. He was a corporate attorney, an arbitrator, and he always wore, you know, the very expensive blue suits and the red power tie, and he looked totally WASPy conservative. But when he was 17, he was the head of a smelting crew. He had worked in the Appalachian coal mines. In the work that he did, he would be prosecuting or trying cases where there would be mentally retarded people and CEOs of multinational corporations. And so his life experience was huge. And it was this life experience that he could bring to bear in understanding other people, with particular reference, for my interest, to whether or not they're lying or telling the truth. We've tested over 8,000 regular police officers. We only found one truth wizard. Among 1,200 therapists tested here in San Francisco, we had 8. However, in other groups, as I indicated to you before, among dispute mediators, 20% of them were wizards. Among arbitrators, about 10%, and among selected police officers for interviewing, another 10%. Okay, let's talk a little about the depiction of a natural lie detector as it's shown on the show Lie to Me, which unfortunately most of you have never watched. However, this depiction is going to get out into the common culture, and I want to correct it as much as I possibly can. Okay. So on the TV show, the natural person, they've said many times, is uneducated. Because, you see, it's supposed to be a kind of an animalistic, you know, sort of thing. You just have this feeling, you know, and you know, like your dog doesn't like you or something, you know, and they know something about you. And maybe they do, but they don't know that you're telling a very subtle lie. In order to be good at the kind of lies that these people are being tested on in their job and in the tests I'm giving them, they have to be smart. and they have to be educated. Of the 50 expert lie detectors, wizards, two-thirds of them have postgraduate degrees. All of them, two have associate's degrees. Everybody else has a college degree. So there's not a single uneducated person among the 50. And yet this is a big point that they make on the TV show. Totally stupid. The other thing is that on the show, the two lie detectors, both the Cal Lightman character, the Tim Roth character, and the expert lie detector, the natural lie detector, are shown as very arrogant. Okay, my character, however, is warm and compassionate, okay, and holistic. Okay, but they're very arrogant, and that's not what these people who I have been working with are like at all. Many of them had used as their controls their supervisors. They would retire after exemplary careers as a sergeant in the police department because they wanted to stay working cases. They didn't want to go into administration. So they're people who are very humble. Most of the people in their lives were shocked. They'd say, the wife would say, well, gee, I think I'm much better than he is. Oh, yeah, right? And she'll take the test, and well, she can't do it. Okay? So they are educated people. They are humble people. And the other thing that the show talks about is that if someone's a natural lie detector, they have a lot of false positives. They will tend to call everybody liars, and that's part of where their success comes from. And in fact, that's not the case. That in the research that I've done, the wizards take much longer to reach their decision about whether somebody is lying or telling the truth. They're less certain of it. They keep an open mind about it. And they ask much more questions about the particular lie scenario I show them. They're just very careful. They are very like work that Philip Tetlock has done on political scientist experts, people who make political forecasts. And he studied their accuracy or lack of accuracy. And what he says is the people who are on TV a lot, very showy, they're like the foxes. You know, they're very quick, they run, you know, but they're wrong. Whereas the hedgehogs, they're careful, they weigh all the evidence, they, you know, and they're the ones who have a higher accuracy level. And then another thing, and I must say that I contributed to this, unfortunately, is the belief that childhood experiences, particularly bad childhood experiences, like you have an alcoholic father, your mother was very emotional, you spoke another language until you were 7 or 8, that if you have those kind of experiences, you're going to be emotionally sensitive, and therefore you're going to be better at recognizing the lies and the emotions of other people. However, what I found when I first reported this after I had interviewed about 25 of the expert lie detectors, but none of the controls, right? So bad. I was so bad, right? Then I started interviewing the controls, and it turned out they had alcoholic fathers and emotional mothers, and, you know. And so the difference was not in the kinds of early life experiences they had, but what they made of it. So what the experts did is they learned to master that difficult emotional early childhood experience, whereas the controls just denied that it ever happened. So one man, highly successful, CEO of a multimillion-dollar corporation, his parents, when he was a young man, sent him and his children in the 60s from Africa to the United States and then from the United States to stay for 6 months before he saw his parents. They lived in all kinds of horrific environments around the world. But he says, oh, it was a wonderful learning experience, and we really love Asian food now. Okay? However, neither he nor his family have ever been out of the United States since he was 20. Okay? So he just put all that behind him, and it was all fine and well and good. So the difference is not what your childhood was like, it's what you make of it. And what you make of it is going to be a function of your personality, your motivations, your drives, and other experiences that you have. Okay, any questions about this aspect or about the wizards or anything like that? No? Okay. Yes. Yes. I'm going to be talking here today a lot about emotional clues and particularly micro-expressions. However, the expert lie detectors, many of them don't use emotional clues. And many of the lawyers have this unbelievable sensitivity to word use and word choice and how people tell a story. And so what I found with the judges and other lawyers is that seems to be their particular gift, is a nuance for language. In terms of, you know, what is your question about the judges? 20% of them are. Yes, of the, you know, 20% of them. But some of them are awful. Like one guy came up, he got 20% on the test. And I said, well, gee, doesn't that give you pause for your work in the courtroom? He says, oh, he says, I can tell. You know? So it doesn't matter that he couldn't tell with this test. It was just he knows what he knows, and there's not going to be any correction to that. And so the people who are expert lie detectors are very open to correction, just like Tiger Woods is open to improvement, even if he's the best in the world. Yes? Can you what?
Can you learn to be a wizard?
I don't know if you can learn to be a wizard. You can learn to get better at lie detection. I think there are certainly underlying skills, facial expression recognition, logicality of language, word use, and so forth. And I think we have done a number of studies. I've just finished an article. And there is a small but significant increase in lie detection accuracy. And the more specific and the more focused the training is, the better the lie detection accuracy becomes. But it's just like golf. You can improve your golf, you know. Whether you can get to be Tiger Woods is a question at some level of some native athleticism. And I think with truth wizardry, you're going to have a certain amount of visual acuity, auditory acuity, pattern recognition ability, and tremendous motivation. These folks really are motivated, you see, and many of us are not. Yes? Yes, I think it is a type of social-emotional intelligent lie detection. But it's not the whole thing. Because, see, many of these people have bosses who are poor lie detectors. But the bosses know how to manage groups, you see? And maybe part of the reason, if you're not too sensitive to individuals, you may be better off at a system level. So I think there are many subsets of social-emotional intelligence, and lie detection accuracy is just one of them. Yeah? Okay, so if we'll switch a little now and talk about the role of microexpressions in detecting deceit. We saw at the start of the talk that little clip of Cato Kaelin doing, you know, trying. See, the thing is, he felt disgusted. He couldn't totally suppress it. So then it's a flash on and off his face, okay? What the evidence shows, what research shows, is that there is no single deception clue. There's no Pinocchio's nose. There's no behavior that every time you see it, it means that a lie has occurred. However, changes in a person's baseline behavior and discrepancies among different communication channels provide clues to you about how people are feeling and how they're thinking. And that information you can use to evaluate whether or not a person is telling the truth. Some of this research is based on the premise that when a person lies, it takes increased mental effort. So that if I say to you, how was your dinner last night, and you didn't like it, okay, so you made something up and you said it was good, and then I say, well, what did you like about it? Well, then you had to remember, you know, what it was, you know, you had to make up something. And then as you're telling it to me, you're having to watching me, am I believing you? But let's say you had something last night, and I would say, gee, I don't remember what I had. I wouldn't care. Do you know, if I'm telling the truth about it, I'm not going to be looking to monitor you to see if you're accepting what I'm saying and so forth. So lying takes more mental energy. And that increase in cognitive load will show itself in use of language, difficulties such as stuttering, and a number of other cognitive verbal clues. Lying itself can cause emotions. You can lie about how you're feeling, like, yes, I love this meal, and you really didn't. But the very act of lying can cause people to have emotions. They can be afraid that they're going to get caught. They can feel guilty because they're telling a lie. Or what most people don't think about, and this was an idea from my friend Paul Ekman, is what he called duping delight. A lot of times people tell a lie, they enjoy putting one over on you, you know? And so you'll see a kind of a little smile that doesn't make sense. And I'm going to show you some examples of that. And so that duping delight is often a clue that you can use. Now, I have been particularly interested in emotional clues as opposed to the verbal ones because emotion is hardwired, it's biologically based, and it's difficult to control voluntarily. Imagine you're at an ATM and somebody comes up behind you and they put something in your back and they say, I've got a gun in your back, give me your money, okay? And you're going to try to be calm and you're going to say, okay. But are you going to say it like I'm saying it? Okay. Are you going to look the same? No. You're going to be afraid or you're going to be angry. You're going to have some kind of emotion that you're going to try to control, but it's going to be difficult for you, even if you're a superior actress, like many of my friends in the audience here are. It's going to be difficult for you to control totally all of the emotion that you feel. So this emotion can be seen in very many aspects of the body. Your vocal intonation. When people lie, their vocal pitch often goes up. Their voice gets shaky. In body language, we saw with Cato Kaelin, you know, how he pulled back and he sort of hunkered in. In gestures that they make, people who are moving their hands when they're telling the truth, this is their baseline, all of a sudden that stops, that's strange. Somebody who does this all the time and it stops, that change is what's important, not whether they're touching themselves or not. And what we've been particularly interested in, facial expressions. Okay, facial expressions can occur in many ways. You can have macro expressions, which is the whole face. I'm going to show you some examples of that. It can occur in subtle or partial expressions, and we'll see those in the live videos later. It can occur in micro expressions, or it can occur in what I call bad morphology. I have a fabulous picture of Prince Charles that I'm going to show you as an example of that, where you try to put a good face on it and you just can't, okay? All right, so we've already gone over this. Microexpressions, they're on and off the face extremely quickly. Not everyone shows them. Not everyone can see them, but you can be trained. Okay. Now, these microexpressions, macroexpressions, this biological basis for emotion is not for all feelings. There are only certain emotions that seem to have universality, to have cross-cultural applicability. And these are the seven that are here. Most people agree with these: fear, sadness, disgust, and happiness. I'm going to show you many examples of those. And also anger, surprise, and contempt. There are others that may or may not be universal, like shame or embarrassment, but there's less agreement about those. And there are other feelings. You know, there are feelings like love, or there's feelings like religiosity, you know, and there's no evidence that those are biologically based. Okay. This is a picture that my friend Paul Ekman took in New Guinea in the 1960s. This is a Stone Age tribesman whose culture had never been exposed to Western civilization. And Paul said to him, show me how you would look if your friends came to visit. Now, how would you describe what he's doing? He's smiling. He's smiling. And Paul went and took pictures of Berklee College students, and he said, okay, smile, or told them a joke and took a picture of them. And then he showed them a group of pictures in the New Guinea tribe. And he says, okay, which of these seven people is expecting friends to visit? And there was a preponderance of people who would pick the smiling, happy face. Okay. This man, we saw Cato Kaelin do this. What is he showing? Disgust. Okay. What Paul then did with his colleague, Wally Friesen, is to take all of the muscles of the face and then to transcribe them from the muscles in the face to numbers so that the facial expressions could be transposed or coded. Now, the face makes many, many movements that have nothing to do with emotion, okay? So this was a very extensive system, and only a very small part of it is useful for coding emotion. Okay, so here, if you look at the expression of this woman who's showing deep anguish, what she's doing is raising the inner corners of her eyebrows, which changes the shape of her upper eyelid. The corners of her mouth are pulled down. That's how everyone in the world, if they're in a private situation where they're not public and they're not monitoring themselves, that's what they're going to look when they're feeling sadness or grief. Okay? This woman is showing fear. The eyebrows are raised and pulled together. The eyes are really open. The lips are drawn back. Okay. Now, the smile is extremely important, I believe, in lie detection because there can be, particularly in the United States, so many variants of the smile. So this, my hero, Tiger Woods, okay, is here. And he's showing what we call a Duchenne smile. A Duchenne smile is one in which you get the corners of the lips. This muscle is called zygomatic major, and you pull it up, and see, everyone can do this, okay? But see how phony this is? Why? Stacy's going, yeah. Why is it phony? My eyes are not involved. I cannot spontaneously fire the muscle around my eye called orbicularis oculi. And that's what happens, but if you told me a joke or said something funny, then it would fire and you would see a face much like you see here on Tiger Woods. So Duchenne is one kind of true enjoyment smile. There is also the Pan Am smile, you know, sort of the business smile. You know, you don't have orbicularis oculi. Okay, and here you see Paul, and on the left you see a slight smile without orbicularis oculi, and on the other you see the same slight smile but with orbicularis oculi. You also can have a deferential smile, like the Mona Lisa will show this, or a smirk, you know, which is really contempt. Or you can have a miserable smile, which is used as a mask for other kinds of emotion. Okay, this is from a study that was done in the 1970s, in which college students in the United States and college students in Japan were looking at gruesome puberty rituals, in which the penis was sliced down the lengthwise. Right. So you see, just the thought of it is disgusting. Well, the American college students, so in private, both the American and the Japanese college students showed the disgust that you see on the American's face. Then the situation was made public, and an experimenter came in the room. So once it was a public situation, they were asked, how do you like the picture? The American student actually exaggerated his disgust. He said, this is gross, man, okay? Whereas the Japanese student, as you see there, he's doing a fake, miserable smile. He's trying to cover it over. But that is not a Duchenne smile, you see? There's no orbicularis oculi, and the zygomatic major is not going all the way up. Now, here's my favorite Prince Charles smile. Now, here's a man who's been in public view his entire life, okay? He was, this is a couple weeks before he married Camilla Parker Bowles. He was out skiing with his sons, and the paparazzi were everywhere. And he was in a rage, and he said to his son, what shall I do? And his son said, smile, just smile, okay? And that's the best he could do, because he was in such a rage. So that would be bad morphology. You see a smile that doesn't look like a natural smile. You ask yourself, why is that happening? Okay. So now I'm going to show you some videos of college students who are lying or telling the truth about strongly held opinions. Okay? They came into a lab at UCSF, and before they knew the study had anything to do with lying, they were given hours and hours of tests. And one of the tests was one in which they were asked about their strongly held opinions about 20 different things, like gun control or birth abortion, all kinds of things they were asked about. Then, for each person, what we did is to pick the one emotion out of the one statement out of the 20 that they all, that was their highest, let me just think. that was their highest, strongest opinion. For the ones you're going to see today, it's either the death penalty for capital crimes or smoking in public places. This is before we had the law in California that you couldn't smoke in public places, and it was still an issue. Okay? So I'm going to show you two or three, depending on how much time we have, segments of these men lying or telling the truth about a very strongly held opinion. Now, don't argue with me that they didn't really believe this. They either did or did not believe this. If they lied successfully, they were told they would make $100. If they were not believed when they were lying, they were going to be put in a dark room and subjected to 45 minutes of intermittent blasts of white noise. Of course, we lied about that, but they didn't know that till later, okay? If they told the truth and were believed, they got the equivalent of $20. And if they were not believed, even if they were telling the truth, they would still were threatened with that punishment, okay? You're going to hear a man interviewing each of these young men. You're not going to see him. You'll just hear his voice. The man doing the interview did not know what the true opinion of the person was. He was reading standardized questions.
And what is your position on this issue?
I don't believe that they should be executed.
Why do you believe that?
Just because... Now, first of all, statistically, most of them tend to be black males, and a number of disproportionate people who go to be executed will be mainly black males and not white males, and so that's one of the reasons why I don't think if you're going to execute one and carry it out that way, then you should try and make sure that everyone has the equal chance. But I think the way the justice system works, it tends to be biased. So that's what I don't like about that, first of all. And I don't see how the state can justify itself in actually killing another person to justify what the other person has done. You know, an eye for an eye only leaves the world blind, so it just...
Well, how long have you had this opinion?
I would say for... Since I first could come up.
Is this your true opinion?
Yes, it is.
You didn't just make this up a few minutes ago.
No, I didn't.
Are you lying to me now?
No.
Okay. How many think he was lying? How many think he was telling the truth? Okay. He was telling the truth. But let's hear why people who thought he was lying thought he was lying. Why? That smile. That continuous smile, okay? What about those of you who thought he was telling the truth? Why? Yes, his smile was a baseline. Was it a true Duchenne smile? It was. Do you see how his face was relaxed? It wasn't tense, okay? But his smile, many people, he's about 50% of people think he's lying and 50% think he's telling the truth. Okay. What other clues might you have used? What? Okay. Another thing that's a real problem is eye contact. Okay. There's a huge study around the world about what clue do people in all cultures use to tell if other people are lying or telling the truth. And most people will say a liar will not look you in the eye. But see, all of us know that. That's a display rule. So when they do studies in laboratories, what they find is when people are lying, they actually increase ligase. They increase ligase. And so there is no relationship, even though back in the 70s and 80s, neuro-linguistic programming taught this business about if you look up one way, you're lying, and if you look the other way, you're telling the truth. What happens is when you ask somebody a question and they have to think about it, it's very common for people to avert their eye gaze. What you have to ask yourself is, does it make sense that they would need to think about something before giving you the answer? So if you said to me, what's your name? And I go, Jean. Okay? That doesn't make sense because I shouldn't have to think about that. If you said to me, what's the cube root of 5,027, then I would leave, okay? But I would look up to shut off external stimulation. Okay. Now, the truth wizards pay a lot of attention to eye contact, but it's not merely eye aversion. What they are looking for, remember I said to you, when you make up a lie, you have to monitor it, the people you're telling it to see whether they're believing you. And so a lot of liars will have, like when we're talking to one another and we're having a conversation, we have a focal length in the middle between us. You know, there's a particular way. And I don't stare at you like this unless I'm in love with you, okay? And then I keep looking at you, you know what I mean? But usually when we have, she's going, sorry, what can I tell you? We just met. It's too early. Right? But so when you are having a conversation with someone, you avert your eye gaze. There's a rhythm to it. And what you'll see in some of the examples I'm going to show you is that the liars are looking intently to see whether their lie is being believed. So it's not that eye gaze is not a good clue. It's just you have to have it be more nuanced. You also, we now have data, my friend Mark Frank is finding, that it's where the eye gaze aversion happens in a particular response. And so there's a real dance that goes on about the linkage of eye gaze and your behavior in your speech that you have to pay attention to. Okay, let me show you another one.
And what is your opinion on this issue?
Should cold-blooded murderers be killed? I believe they should be.
And why is it that you believe what you do on this issue?
I think I'd be.
Okay. What are you thinking so far? You're thinking he's lying. Why? What? The eyes tensed. He had rapid blinking. It's a little too deliberate. The other thing he did is he repeated the sentence, the question. A lot of people will do that to buy time. Doesn't mean they're lying. You know, when the Dole Clinton debate, you know, Clinton, hail fellow well met. He wouldn't, you know, Dole would repeat the question, pause, and it made him look untrustworthy. Clinton would do the same kind of buying time, but he'd say something like, very good question, Mary, and let me, you know, and he'd have filler like that to give himself some time. So this guy is taking charge of the interview. He's repeating the question. What would you call his mouth? What kind of an expression is that? What? Sort of a smirk, right? And you see how he's enjoying himself? This is not a Duchenne smile, you see? This is a kind of smirky, okay? I love him. He's such a good liar. Wait till you see what he does.
Sit on. Hammy Ruby's code of law, eye for eye, tooth for tooth. And I feel that it's justice. I mean, you know, there's always a chance that they could be the wrong person or something like that. So I still think the court system should be a little more accurate.
Okay. See the eyes checking out what the interviewer is asking? See that little smirk? He's really happy with himself. Did you notice the big shrug? Did this big shrug, okay? If you said to me, how was your dinner last night? And I said, oh, pretty good. Okay, what am I doing? I'm dismissing it. Okay, if this is his most strongly held belief, you wouldn't dismiss it or negate it, in part at least, with a big shrug. However, his story is that he still thinks the courts should be more accurate, but yet he's trying to say he believes in the death penalty. The interviewer picks up on it and look at and listen to what he does.
Before they do something.
You think the court system should be more accurate, but you do think
I still yet believe that
they should be executed.
Right, people. The interviewer correct. Caught him in an inconsistent.
So how long do you have this opinion?
Several years, I would say. I think what it goes back to is when
Okay. So now he's having to save it. Okay? And wait till you hear what he says.
See, I had in my family, my mom's side of the family, my mother's brother was shot by his wife.
My mother's brother.
Okay.
and it was devastating to the family. Some side of the family wanted to see her put to death or what have you, but it wasn't premeditated. And others just wanted her to go to jail and serve her time. And after that, it was close to home, and I kind of felt like that's the way it should be.
So is this your true opinion?
Yes.
You didn't just make this up a few minutes ago.
No.
Are you lying to me now?
No.
You see the quality of that smile? That's that smirk, you see. That's not a true Duchenne smile. This man, most people think, is telling the truth, particularly college students, because they could not tell a lie about someone in their family being murdered. Okay? So they think because they could never tell that lie, somebody else could never tell that lie either. If you are a little bit more cold-blooded or a little bit more objective, you think, mother's brother? That's an uncle. What's this mother's brother? So odd use of language, okay? And the continual smirk just doesn't make sense, okay? But most people, I stopped it and had you look at him early on so you could see the behavior. But most people listening to the whole thing, they are suckered in by that story about the death in the family. Okay, now here's another one. This is short. This is about smoking in public places.
And what is your position on this issue?
I feel it should be banned.
And why do you believe that?
Secondhand smoke, because we all know, it causes cancer. So it should, it should be banned.
How long have you had this opinion?
Ever since I contemplated it, 10 years.
Is this your true opinion that it should be banned? You just make this up a few minutes ago.
No.
Are you lying to me now?
No.
Okay. How many think he's lying? Okay. How many think he's telling the truth? Okay. Those of you who think he's telling the truth, why do you think that? What? Why? Because you liked him, right? Why did you think he was telling the truth? He seemed very transparently open. Anyone else who thought he was? He seemed. Right. So this group, most 5% of people only think he's telling the truth, but he is telling the truth. Okay? The thing is, he's a goofball. You see? And this is the problem. I read a paper called The Boy Who Cried Wolf Effect, okay? We usually make judgments of other people on the basis of enduring characteristics, okay? So if we like someone, it's hard for us to think that they're telling a lie to us, okay? And there's a lot of reasons that we don't want to feel like we're being lied to. And so people make instantaneous judgments, right? He looks very different from the other guys who are much more serious, and he is different. He was a drummer in a rock band, and so he didn't like the smoke in the clubs, okay? But he comes in with his baseball cap and his Band-Aid, But his face was relaxed, okay? And it's like, suppose I said to you, do you smoke? Do you smoke? No. And I said, are you telling me the truth? Yes. She just repeated it. But he thought it was ridiculous. Why would I lie about this? You see? He had chosen to tell the truth. And so somebody saying, are you lying to me now? That's why he laughed bigger, because he thought, well, this is ridiculous. And then the guy kept going. And so he thought it got more and more ridiculous. Okay? And so the cues to behavior are part of it, but I find with the truth wizards, many of the truth wizards get him wrong. The people who get him right are the people who've grown up with people like him, or they've interviewed him at the police station, So they're familiar with him. Okay, we have a few more minutes, so let me, any questions that you have about any of this information? Yes. Okay, are there places? There are several online. You can get books. Like my colleague Paul Ekman has a book called Telling Lies, and he's got a website connected with the Lie to Me TV show, and you can buy CDs there to figure out, how good you are at facial expression stuff. So you can do that. And there are occasional, but they're usually professionally oriented, towards cops or lawyers or people like that. Yeah. Yes. Okay. My career-long interest has been in social-emotional intelligence. I'm very interested in how it is that one person can understand another person, and why is it that some people just can't? And so what makes somebody be a superior therapist, you see, or superior interviewer? And so that's my own personal interest. But the work that we have and the stuff we have found in our research, we lecture to police and work with police all the time. On the TV show Lie to Me, the characters are shown actually investigating crimes. We never did that. That's ridiculous. But police officers would often videotape their interviews and send them to us. And we would watch the interviews and look for hot spots, places in the interview that we thought the person was less defended or where there was an inconsistency or something like that. So, yes. I don't know. And you see, I'm not a truth wizard. I just study them. It's like you don't have to have cancer to study it. You know what I mean? So, I think many of the truth wizards who are really truth wizards, people in their lives don't know that about them. Do you know? And they actually have to turn it off in their life. And in their personal life, they often are not so good. They've been married 4 or 5 times. They've been swindled in business deals because their emotions get into it, you see? Whereas in an interview situation, see, most of us go into an interview situation, we want people to like us. We've got our personality, and we're expressing our personality, you know? And they're not like that. They go in there. They're in the zone. They're watching the person. They're adjusting who they are to what they believe this person needs in order to give up the truth, you see? And so they sort of take their personality out of the situation. When they fall in love or when they're working with their children, you see, where they're invested, then they're no better than you and I are. You know, so, yes. Okay, is there a difference between somebody who's lying and somebody who's not sure of himself? That's where you get to the question of baseline. So somebody who's not sure of himself, I think it would be clear in the context of what he would say. If somebody's lying, the uncertainty or unsureness would be more focused on particular elements or particular points in the interaction. Okay. Are you asking about how easily detectable certain kinds of people are or how good they are at lie detection? Certain kinds of groups that are easily, less or more easily detectable. Yes, there are. And a lot of time people think that con men are really difficult to detect, and they're not. What happens is con men have a very specific talent, in my observation, and that is they know who to target with their particular scam. And so you look, I love these law enforcement shows, you know, reality shows. And so they'll say, tomorrow night, the man who was married to 5 women simultaneously, you know. And I'm thinking, God, he's going to be handsome, he's going to be rich, he's going to be charming. He's awful, he's a total dork, you know. However, and all the women's families and friends were saying, this guy is no good. But the man would make the woman feel like she was desirable. And so what if he was never there on Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever, you know? He was out doing whatever was necessary. Totally ignored the clues that were there. So it's not that they are so good. It's just that they're, because lying is a dialectic. We are lied to because we want to believe it. That's why Madoff could make out like he did. People wanted to have that be a possibility. I think psychopaths are like these dorks I was telling you about. The psychopath will pick the person who is going to be amenable to their lies. But many people around them know that they're telling lies. So it really is the belief pattern of the person that they're listening to. Yes, I would think lies on the telephone would be vocal pitch increase. Okay, choice of language. And I also think that people in their professions develop particular kinds of sensitivities. So like you do particular kinds of law. And so I would think if you had a test that was around that kind of lie, you would do much better than these sort of general lies that are not really in your everyday purview. What I found is that cops did very well on the lies I have that are about crime, stealing money. They did less well on lies about emotions, whereas therapists had just the opposite pattern. They did very well on the lies about emotion, and they didn't do so well on the lies about crime. And so I think that you know what it sounds like when somebody's telling a story about a particular realm. It's like working with students, Candace, you know? I mean, I did a study down in San Jose, and administrators and faculty did very well on these kinds of lies, whereas other staff members at the college did not, because they didn't deal with the students in the same way. Yes. Some poker players are very sensitive and have contributed to our knowledge. What they talk about is tells, but what they mean is a behavior that a particular person might have. So there's no Pinocchio's nose, but some people, like in these films, you saw this guy covered his face before he changed his lie, and so for him that might be a tell. He covers his face when he's getting ready to tell a new lie, but most people, they can do that and it doesn't mean anything. Okay, so poker players do pay attention to nonverbal behaviors and are good at that, and they get feedback, you see. Oh, right. He knows that he's not the only one, but somebody has to pay, you know, so... Right. Because the country is reeling, and they want to close things off. You see? I got caught in a Ponzi scheme. You know, you're asking about being a truth wizard. I met this guy. He was selling some, you know, second mortgages. I thought he was the stupidest guy I had ever met, you know. I thought he was just a jerk, and I thought he was dumb and anxious, and I just disliked him. But my friends had invested with him for 15 years. And they had made a ton of money. And so here I have my judgment of this individual person, and here I have a 15-year track record. So I invested with him. Turned out he had started doing coke. And at the time, I didn't know the clues to coke. Now I know the clues to coke. Okay? So. Yes. Yes. We haven't looked at blind people, but you're absolutely right. And some people's awareness, like one woman said to me, do you hear how he said money? She said, his voice got soft. I didn't hear it, you know. And then he went on to say he didn't need the money. And she said, so I don't believe him, because the way he said money is like somebody caressing a lover. And so somebody who likes money that much would not say he didn't need it. So thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Appreciate your attention. Oh, my God. Thanks.